Welcome to Diary of a Tax Practice Owner, the show where we say goodbye to burnout and hello to freedom through automation. We're Jamie and Jessica, and in each episode, we'll explore how you can transform your tax or accounting practice, giving you the freedom you desire as an entrepreneur. We'll share stories and lessons from industry pros who have successfully transitioned from being skill-based producers to thriving business owners. Get ready to be inspired, motivated, and equipped with the tools to build a business you love. Let's dive in.
Welcome back to another edition of Diary of a Tax Practice Owner. I'm so excited to have our guest here today because we're going to be talking about big strategy things, big ideas like acquisitions and exit strategies. And this is definitely something you don't want to miss. I'm excited because we have Fred Stein, and Fred is the tax director at BQ Tax and Accounting LTD, where he has been helping small and medium-sized businesses grow and thrive for over 30 years. He's an expert in accounting, tax, and keeping cash flows flowing smoothly. Fred earned his accounting degree from San Diego, Oswego, aced the CPA exam, and earned his EA designation in 2019. In 2007, he founded BQ Tax Accounting, where he, under his leadership, it has grown into a multi-state powerhouse with over 25 remote pros, making magic happen across the country. Fred, I'm so excited to have you here today, and I would love if you would start sharing with us about your journey. How did you get into growing this large business in a multi-state model and having so many tax professionals working underneath you?
Well, thank you for having me, first of all. And it's actually, I kind of found my way back into accounting. I started off working for a CPA firm when I graduated. Mm-hmm. Didn't like it. I left, went to working for a private nonprofit organization. Loved it. They don't really pay a lot of money. So I started my little side hustle. A few clients came. Next thing you know, I had to make my choice. I chose to come back into tax. I thought I was out. They dragged me back in. That was back in 92, 95 is when I went out on my own and just did it slowly because I had young kids. And to me, you know, I could always make money, and I made enough money to live happily. And I didn't work as much back then. Just spent a lot more time with my children. Kids grow up, they leave home and they say, go away, Dad. And so, you know, that's when I bought my tax practice back in 2007. It was originally called Beckley and Carini, and we shortened it to BQ. And the BQ, everybody asked what it's for. It's still a tribute to the original founders that I bought out. A couple of years, my now partner, she had worked for me in my restaurant that I also bought at the same time, which was an idea.
At the same time, that is kind of crazy, Fred.
In a restaurant, yes. It was enjoyable, but it was a lot of stress. I lost quite a bit of money in that one and closed it down within a year. Tiani, my now partner, she came with me and started at the front desk, and she's become invaluable to me, and she handles all the admin side of everything. So she became my partner a number of years ago, and my kids grew up and moved on, so I'm spending less time with them. So we decided to empire and wound up moving out here to California. And so we bought a practice out here at first just because we needed more revenue to support both states. Yeah. Next thing you know, I'm talking to actually three different people about acquiring them. I've got a deal going right now that's waiting for the lawyers to work on it. I just spoke to no one earlier today. So this will be, I think, probably our 10th acquisitions if we go through with both of them.
So what's driving you, Fred, in the acquisition space? Is it, you know, just raiding the world, or is it more just, is there something personally that's driving you to want to acquire these other organizations?
A couple of reasons, and it's not a pinky in the brain thing. We're not taking over the world today, and so we never know. It could be. Right. Originally, we fell into the first acquisition out here. I was at a meeting, and somebody said they were selling, and I got into that. And we realized that, you know, we had a small office. It was me, Tiani, and we had three to four other people that were working with us part-time and on different things. And we took pride in the fact that we were helping others put food on their table. So as we started growing, we didn't necessarily grow with the intent for us making more money, although we do and we did. But we were happy to be able to act as a way to train new tax people properly. And because we've all seen some of the garbage that gets thrown out there, and we want to make sure that we train it. And we allow people, other practitioners who are going out on their own or wanted to go out on their own, they didn't have enough work to go out on their own. And we created a space for them so they can grow their business, come work for us part-time when and how they want. And they're helping put food on my plate. I'm helping put food on their plate. And many of them, after a couple of years, they don't need to work for me anymore because their path has grown and they can work on their own.
Wow.
Part of it is my retirement, because when I was young, I did play a lot, so I wasn't as responsible as many other people, so I didn't throw a lot into my retirement. Like, my wife is the opposite. You know, she's got her 401k and she's all set, but the main reason my growth was to grow it to a certain level, because my business is now my retirement.
Was there a point where you made that shift over to seeing your business as an asset that you could then sell in the future? Or was it just kind of like it naturally evolved to that? I'm curious, because there's got to be a point where you wake up and you're like, oh, shit.
Yeah.
I don't have the 401k. I don't have the safety net to catch me after I'm done. And I don't want to work until I'm 85.
Exactly. And that hit me probably about 15 years ago or so. And buddy, we had some, but I don't have a lot. And the bulk of it is in other assets. And, you know, we're expecting to go over $2 million in revenue this year. And my goal is, you know, we had an original goal of like getting it to $10 million and then selling, but I'm not sure I want to be that large just yet. So we're okay where we are now. Maybe, you know, revenue is another million or two would be nice. And we're also doing the same stuff you're doing, building our tech stack so that my partner and I don't need to be involved in the day-to-day. This past year, I pulled out almost entirely out of the personal side of the tax prep part. I'm still working with the bookkeepers and the entity side, and I'm hoping to be out of that next year as well. So within the next 2 or 3 years, it'll be basic solely on expansion, acquisitions, maybe diversifying into other types of businesses so that we don't have to be doing this all the time. And the hope is I'm either going to sell it or I can just keep collecting a paycheck for as long as it can run by itself.
Yeah. So what are you focusing on as you're thinking about your exit strategy? I think acquisitions, a lot of people are familiar with the acquisitions world, right? There's all kinds of chitter chatter on all the Facebook forums and all that. So I think there's amazing things we could talk about there, but I really want people to be thinking about the exit strategy, because I asked a question the other day in one of the Facebook groups, and it was, you know, like, what are you planning on doing for retirement? And there were a lot of people that were like, I plan on working until they have to pry my cold dead hands off the keyboard. And like, I were really serious.
Yeah.
And I feel for them to a degree, because I think they've been so immersed and enmeshed into their work that they haven't taken the time, like you took the time when your kids were young, to be with them, right? There's a lot of people that are just hustle, hustle, hustle all the time, like grind, grind, grind. And when they get into their 60s and 70s, they're like, I don't have anything else out there. Yeah. So when you start thinking about your exit strategy, I mean, it sounds like you definitely have some good retirement plans ahead for you, and I'm excited for you on that. What are the things that you're doing to prepare yourself for that exit strategy that others can maybe take away that have not really given it a lot of thought?
It's one of the things that I talk about when I do coaching for other tax pros or when I do webinars, is we see this with our clients, that they retire and they stop dual working and they get old very quickly. And one of the things I encourage all tax pros, they need to have a life outside of tax. Tax can't be who I identify as. You know, we take a lot of trips. We do a lot of hiking. You know, I play golf. You got to have things that you do and you plan for it. And you can't. We had a person in our local chapter. She just passed away at 96. Mm-hmm. She was still working.
Oh.
Yep. You know, another one, she has an 80-something year old person that works in their office, I think just retired this year. And they're, you know, if I'm going to do that, like, I may want to slow down and just be that old guy that comes in for 5 to 10 hours a week, creating havoc in the office, and I'm going to leave and then say, oh my God, thank God he's gone for the day. That's my retirement role. My partner understands that. She's nearly 20 years younger than me. So my transition is, if we can find another younger version of me to take my place, you know, either I would get bored out or not. We'll figure whether I just stay on the slow thing.
Yeah.
But finding that and understanding that, people are hesitant to recognize that. And they realize when they get to a standpoint and they want to sell, and that's not a good exit strategy.
Right.
You need to plan your retirement. You need to plan your exit. You want to plan for emergencies, as we discussed previously outside of this podcast. And it's a 3 to 5 year process when you're going to sell. Because a lot of tax pros, they don't have everything in place that they need to do to exit. Yeah.
What are the top like 3 to 4 things that people need to be thinking about for that exit plan that you can kind of share with us today?
They need to figure out whether they want to go and be gone and sell and go off right into the sunset, whether they want to still do taxes, but on a much smaller scale. They want to slow down and they want to sell and stay on. And they need to do the same things we do with our clients. And we are our absolute worst clients. You know, when we have clients, the stock market goes down, we talk them off the ledge. But, you know, right now, people are heavily invested in NVIDIA. That went down. And I know my finance guy is getting calls all the time because they're wondering, and we're telling them, you ride out the stock market.
Right.
And we talk to people about retirement in our industries, and we don't hear ourselves speak. We don't put together our plan. We don't make sure we know what we're going to do afterwards. You know, we just retire and stop, and that's not healthy. It's just like working too much is not healthy.
Right. So I'm curious your thoughts on this. I've done quite a bit of research on the value of a practice that has implemented, you know, effective, efficient workflows, converted their client base over to online portals, have, you know, been doing the work to systematize their businesses, not necessarily to the full degree of automation, but definitely like building the culture around online portals and, you know, virtual document management, that kind of thing. So they're not the old school, like paper.
Yeah. There's a lot of them out there.
There's a lot of those out there, but tax practice owners, like, and accounting owners, they're not thinking about that. They're just thinking, I've been building this book of business for 20 or 30 years. I've got, you know, 500 or 800 clients and I'm making, you know, $2 million a year. It's awesome. We're doing great. But when somebody looks at that practice, it does not see a $2 million practice.
No.
They see the investment that they're going to have to take. They see that they're going to have to convert all of those clients over to a virtual space. They see the importance of having, because a lot of people aren't in your case too, like where you're acquiring those practices, they're not in your same town. No. So you don't have the luxury of driving down the street to go and deal with paper documents, right? Like you need to have that. So are those some of the things that you're thinking about when you're acquiring that these exit strategy folks should be thinking about as well?
Yeah. Our last acquisition 2 years ago was more of an old school practice. It did come with a number of employees, and that was one of the reasons that it was attractive to us. It wasn't the best of fit. We still have it. We've lost a lot of clients because we kind of modernized everything.
Mm-hmm.
And we're in the process of going virtual with that one. But it was heavily invested in paper. It didn't use any of the workflows. And it to me, it's both a good acquisition and a failed acquisition at the same time. Okay, we got good people out of it. We didn't lose money on it. It did create a lot of headaches for us. So we won't ever buy another, you know, 100% paper office again if they are not mostly virtual, you know. And that was in Virginia. So I'm traveling from California to Virginia. You know, we're standing, you know, and my remoters, they're good. They come into the office occasionally during tax season. We'll fly them in, put them up, give them a car, and they'll come work in the office for a couple of weeks for those in-house people. And we did that in Virginia. I got my grandkids are back East Coast, so I don't mind flying back there and see them on the weekends. But, you know, the one I'm acquiring now is 40 minutes away and they're 98% virtual. The lady I spoke to this morning, she's 100% virtual. Mm-hmm. So those are more valuable.
Right. Absolutely.
I bought what I call Walmart practices before, where, you know, it's the drop your stuff off, get in and get out attitude.
Yeah.
And I won't ever buy that. To me, that's good fit for some people.
Yeah.
And I'm not downgrading. It's just not for us because we're more of a virtual and we don't want to be that eight, come in, sit down, drop it out. We have some clients that are like that, but it's not something we want to be in anymore.
Yeah. I think But clients, honestly, maybe the older generation clients are the exception to this. I don't think accounting and tax clients want to be in that world anymore either. Honestly.
We have to teach them. You don't need to be there. It's like, get what's your stuff. And then we'll have a meeting after we're three quarters of the way through to clear everything up. And
Yeah, there's lots of ways of doing that. And even just communicating digitally through a portal, you know, where you can actually have the conversation and be like, hey, I asked you all these questions. We, our program leans and uses Taxium, of course, but we lean heavily into those organizers. And we're having a virtual, like, I like to look at the organizers as like an asynchronous interview, right? Like, we get to ask them questions, then we get to ask clarifying questions, then we get to ask another question, and we get most everything that we need, unless a red flag comes up and we're like, oh, wait, no, we need more clarification on that, right? And so when we're working with our clients, like, that's how we're thinking about these types of interactions. So for anyone that's listening that's like, well, how do you do this then if you're not meeting with these people, you know, at the start to get all the documents and get all the information? It's through technology. Like, that is everything that Fred is talking about here. So
absolutely.
Yeah. I'm curious too. So you said that you guys are leaning into the tech side of things. How did you transition that fully paper practice? Like, would you share with us like what that journey was like? Because I think a lot of people think that it has to be really hard. It is a journey. Like, it takes time. You said 3 to 5 years. And I think, honestly, from 100% paper, it's at least 2 years. 2 to 3 years is probably a safe, like, not forced on the client, not breaking yourselves and your brains on how this all happened. So I'm curious how that experience was for you.
Well, we started pre-pandemic doing this, okay? Sure. Back in 2017, when I met my wife and decided to move to California, a couple of years before that, my partner moved 150 miles away and married her husband. Mm-hmm. And so we went remote at that point in time, you know, using the local software and logging into the machines. And so when the pandemic hit, we were already set up for that. And then by 2017, we had our IT guy build us our own server. So we had virtual workstations as opposed to the log me in stuff that takes up space. Mm-hmm. So we were already on a virtual workstation. We wanted to cut down on paper. So we started telling clients that we're going to give them discounts to join the portal, to do that. And with the goal that at that time, anybody over the age of 60 was, or over 50 at that stage, was allowed to use old school. But if you're under 50, you need to do tech. But older people now use tech all the time for doctor's offices. They Zoom with their grandkids. So they're more well-versed to it now. So we started it back around 2013, 2014. We started being less paper just from, it was the way to go. And pretty soon it got to the point now is, if you want a paper copy of your tax return, there's an additional charge for that now.
Yeah, love that.
And we're now taking some of our clients, and we evaluate clients every single year. So now we're taking like 25 or 50 clients every single year, and we're taking them up and we're packaging them up and we're selling them off to some of our remoters who are starting their own practice. So their prices are lower than ours. Our prices are higher. And these are the ones that may need that little more handholding we'll handhold, but it's going to cost you money. And these are smaller returns that still want the handholding, where some of my younger remoters who are just starting out, they're perfect for them. They pay me and they're still making more than what they're charging. And it helps them value themselves and then charge more for their services as well.
That's so cool. I love that you have this. It's almost just like a mentorship academy that you built into your business. I love that.
it's something we actively talk. We've talked about it, and we see it as a mentorship, and we try to take people that aren't necessarily the normal fits in the business. Like my administrative tax department manager, she was a stay-at-home mom for 5 years when she applied, and was just a receptionist. Mm-hmm. And we wound up giving her a chance, even though she hadn't worked in 5 years.
Yeah.
One of our best decisions is we'd ask her to do things they were already done because she did them the previous year, and she's invaluable now. She runs our tax department from the admin side for us.
That's so cool. I love that. Well, Fred, is there anything that you would share with somebody who is in maybe like the earlier stages of the exit planning strategy that you think that if you had known this, you know, 5 years ago, before you like actually started your active exit strategy plan, that you wish you had known back then that you could share with them?
You should, whether you're in your first year or in your 20th year, you need to be looking at your exit strategy. What is your long-term goals? We talk to clients whenever we plan, what's the 1 year, 3 year, 5 and long-term goals? We should have that for ourselves, put it in place. Yes, you need to feed your kids, put food on your plate, but please don't take every single client. Not every client is worth having.
Yeah.
In this industry, the client is not always right because they're watching TikTok videos. So build the practice that you want now, that you want in the future, build that now. Right.
Yeah.
Take the clients you want. Or if you have to take everything just because you do need the money, make sure you know you're going to get rid of them. And as you take on these two new higher clients, get rid of the four lower clients and help bring that out. I've never been, when I was younger at the CPA firm, we'd sit around in the early 20s and going to the bars and say, and we were in the days where they beat you down. They're working 70 hours a week. Yeah. And we said, we're never going to have this kind of a practice. And you know, we, my partner, we built a family-friendly practice where we tell our employees, go to that kid's kindergarten play. You can take an hour and a half off during tax season. Go do it. I have remoters with young kids that they would take the week off during spring break because the kids were home and it's taxing. Mm-hmm. Build it for the full year and not just, I don't see any pride in working 8 hours a week, 100 hours a week, and not seeing your family. I never did that. I don't want to choose to do that.
I love that. And I think those are words that everyone listening needs to take to heart. And if you're not doing that, and if you had those same conversations when you were working for someone else and you said, I'm never going to do this, don't do it in your business now.
We do.
You probably are. Like, that's need some good introspection to like, just sit with yourself quietly one day and just be like, okay, am I doing this? Am I actually creating the business that I want? And if you're not, know that there's people like Fred out there mentoring others and sharing these types of things. I would love, friend, how can people come and like hang out in your world and like be exposed to you? Because I think I am a firm believer that like we just sometimes need to be, even if it's like anonymously mentored by sure. these people, but able to just see what others are doing and the thoughts and the beliefs that they have. And we can start adopting those as our own. So I would love for our audience to know where they can come and hang out with you.
Well, they can always find me on any of the Facebook groups. I'm in a bunch of them. I do run a Facebook group for Tax 101 where we've got other tax pros. It's a group where they can answer all those so-called stupid questions that they get beat up on some of the other groups. So, and it's not to say that we're just answering tax 101 questions. They get some complicated questions, but it's a place where they can come and ask the questions. It doesn't mean they're not going to be told to do some research on their own, but it's a mentoring group where some of the other groups are there to maybe, both mentor, but to give answers and each group is different. I run an UltraTax group. I run a Short Prep group, but you can find me in Cap and Compass. You can find me in Ask the Tax Practice Pro and other ones.
Great.
I'm on Twitter, but that's more of a fun, just troll place for people. But
where you want to hear some sassy tax talk?
That's it. And yeah, I'm quite open, and I can be abrupt and brusque at times, and I'm an acquired taste. So.
Well, I don't agree with that, but I think you have a lot of great ideas and great things to share. So I appreciate you being a mentor in the industry and being here today to share with us your story. So we appreciate getting to hear about how acquisitions and exit strategy are so key to really having a thriving business. So I hope everyone took away some valuable takes from Fred today. And Fred, thank you so much for being our guest. We'll see you on the next Diary of a Tax Practice Owner. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Jamie. Have a great day.
Thank you for tuning in to Diary of a Tax Practice Owner. We hope today's episode inspired you to take the next step in your entrepreneurial journey. If you enjoyed the show, please subscribe, leave us a 5-star rating. Your feedback helps us reach more listeners just like you. Don't forget to follow us on social media or on our website at workflowsfortaxpros.com for more resources and insights. Until next time, remember, automation equals freedom. And building a business that you love is within your reach. See you soon.